Hi, this is Martin Andelman from Mandelman Matters, and this is a Mandelman Matters podcast. Today, we're going to talk about a subject that nobody likes to talk about. We're going to talk about estate planning. What happens after you die? That's what it is. It's no fun to talk about, but it's even less fun to think about if you don't plan for it. So I have two experts with me today, Renee Gabbard, a partner in the private client service group at Brian Cave in Irvine. She's an estate planning attorney, and Mike Moorhead, the managing partner at Tippett Moorhead. Mike has spent about 35 years in the financial services industry, and he's an expert in retirement planning and estate planning issues. So we have two real experts with us today, and what we're going to do is make a list. That's right, a list of everything that goes into the complete estate plan. Tell you what, it's a perfect opportunity to grab a piece of paper, take a couple of notes, and follow along with the list. In 30 minutes, you'll have a complete list of everything that you need to do in order to have a complete estate plan for yourself and your family. It's not a difficult thing to do. It's just something that's easy to put off. But I'll tell you what, once you have it done, it does feel better. It really does. To know that you've got your will, it's updated, you have the trust, it's all buttoned up and ready to go. You've got your healthcare directives, you've got your powers of attorney, you know where it all is. It's one of the most important things that you can really do for your family if you think about it. So today, we've got two experts that are going to walk us through those decisions, tell us what's involved, and I hope you find it interesting and I hope you find it valuable. I really think you will. So here they are, Renee Gabbard, estate planning attorney, and Mike Moorhead from Tippett Moorhead, on this Mandelman Matters podcast. Okay, I'm here with two special guests that have been here before, Mike Moorhead from Tippett Moorhead and Renee Gabbard, who's the estate planning attorney from Brian Cave here in Orange County. Guys, are you with me?
Yep. Hi, Martin.
Hi. We were going to get into today to estate planning. I mean, Renee, you're an estate planning attorney. Mike, obviously, you know all the areas of retirement planning, and we've been focusing in on women's issues, but it really these in many ways apply to both men and women. I think women are kind of up against more challenges than men. A survey lately said that the interest of women in retirement planning has jumped to 62% compared with 35% in 2006. So it's clear that women are seeing that as being more important, which is a good thing. Women are up against challenges that are unique in that they really have a harder road to hoe than some of the male counterparts. They have less money coming from Social Security because their overall income was less and so forth. So today we're going to talk about estate planning. And we're going to kind of make this into a list. I know a lot of the people that listened to the last podcast asked about making this into a list. So if you're listening, you should consider this your list of topics that go into estate planning, what you need to think about. Renee, is the first step to make sure you have a will? Is that number one?
Yeah, there's a suite of documents that you want in estate planning, and they're broken down into two categories. So if you're making a list, I'm going to start with the what happens if you die list. And then the second list was what happens if you're sick list. So on the what happens if you die list, it's really governed by the will and a trust. And the first document that you usually look at in terms of drafting is the will. And the will says what happens when you die, but wills are usually bad in some states, particularly California, because wills go through a probate proceeding, which is much like a bankruptcy proceeding. You have to file the will. You have to inventory the assets. It can take 2 or 3 years to administer. So what happens is that people draft very small wills called pour-over wills. And they say, I want everything in my trust. If I miss an asset, darn it, go through probate, but it goes to my trust. So wills are very short. They're called pour-over wills nowadays, and they're only about 2 or 3 pages long. And they have a number of items to them. The first one is they identify your family situation, whether you have children, whether you have deceased children, whether you've been married or divorced. And the next segment basically says, after I identify my family, I want everything to go to my revocable trust, which we'll talk about in a minute. The next part of it, though, says, who is my executor? Who will administer this will? And the person who handles the money has a lot of names to them. They're called the executor of the will, the trustee of the trust, guardian of the estate for your children. They're known by different names, but in the trust context, they're called the executor. And this is the first decision where, as a husband and wife, you can really have a breakdown as to who should manage the money if you both were deceased. So, Martin, do you have any thoughts on that?
That's who should take over if we're both not here. I guess that's the first time where you have to look at your spouse and go, well, is it my brother or your sister, right?
Right. And the conversation is usually, well, I think my brother might be better. And the other one's saying, oh, really? I think my sister might. So right. What you could do is you could name co-executors. That is an option. So you can name co-executors. Sometimes that's the best of both worlds. And you definitely want to think about some backup people if they decline to act. Some people do not want to act in that role.
Yeah. The question I wanted to ask about this, do you need to have an attorney drop a will? There are a lot of these things online saying you do it yourself, but I think it might not be a good idea that because it's very subtle differences that can end up causing a problem or ending up with something being in probate.
Yeah, there's, like I said, wills usually go through probate. In California, if you have more than $150,000 of assets, then you're going to go through probate with a will. But a lot of people try and do it themselves. They're called holographic wills. And then they're in your own writing, signed and dated. One of our Supreme Court justices actually died with a holographic will within the last 10 years, so it's not unheard of. But mistakes can be made, and the problem is that everything is construction and phrasing. And if you don't word it correctly, it leaves a gap for someone to come in and try and destroy your wishes. So that's why you have a lawyer draft it. There are other online services too, but the problem is you're editing the online services, not being a lawyer yourself, not knowing if the words you're adding or deleting are important or not. So my recommendation is to get a referral to an attorney who can do this for you.
Is it valid to think that you could try to save some time? You could try outlining something yourself and taking it to the lawyer.
Yeah, I think that's okay, but what the lawyer will do is say, I can't take what you've done because it won't have any legal impact likely. So I'm going to take those concepts, though, and we're going to craft you something that does work for
right,
you.
Right, right. Okay, so the will is everybody should have this. Nobody, there's really no one should not have a will. If you don't have one, you've been putting it off. That's really a must.
Yeah, the problem with not having a will is if you don't say where you want your assets to go, all states have what's called an intestate law, and it will force your assets, probably the people you don't want to get them. So the will is very necessary. The other thing about the will that's really important is this is the first place where you start to talk about, which is very important to women, who is going to raise your children. And that where you name the guardian of the person, which is the guardian of the person who has physical custody for your children, is the will. And that can be even more volatile than who handles the money.
Yeah, very important. If you don't have one, it's sort of a do it today kind of thing. You don't know what tomorrow will bring, and it's just a must. Now, what about the trust? Is it a living trust? I mean, what about the issue of trusts?
Yeah, so trusts are your next step. It basically says what happens if you're married, one of you dies, and then what happens if you both die. And the trust really establishes your wishes and the distribution of your assets at death. The trustees of the trust will administer your wishes, and you don't have to go through a court proceeding.
So that's done to avoid probate?
It's done to avoid probate, absolutely.
Okay, so what's involved in doing it? It sounds somewhat like the will. I mean, you're deciding who's going to be the executor and things like that?
Yeah, it's very similar. Once I walk people through the will, I can say things like, oh, you've chosen so-and-so as your executor. Let's make them the trustee of the trust. And a lot of it carries through. There's two important decisions to be made, though, in the trust, is what happens if one spouse dies, and then what happens if you both die. Usually, if one spouse dies, you can say, well, half of it is my money. I can do what I want. But the person who's deceased, they might say, well, I want my money because I'm deceased, protected. So you, surviving spouse, can get the income, but the principal has to go to our children. Or they can say, no, I trust you. Please make sure these assets are protected. I'm going to give them all to you. I'm hoping they go to our children. So there is a decision point if one of them passes away.
Okay, now, without getting too technical, can you sort of just draw out the difference of what happens if you go through probate versus having a trust? Like, just so people can kind of hear how different that is.
Sure. Let's take hopefully you have a trust administration. If you have a trust and one of you passes away or both of you pass away, the trustees come in, look at the assets, look at what the trust says, file last returns and distribute the assets in a fairly orderly proceeding. If instead you're in probate, everything is governed by the court rules. You have to go in and get appointed as the executor. You have to file an inventory of all the assets. A probate examiner will examine the assets and see if you put decent values on them. You also open up creditors' claims periods. times for the will to be contested. And then you have to file an inventory of all the activities you've done. And then at the end of all that period, when taxes have been paid and everything's been filed, then you can file an order for final distribution to the beneficiaries. I've never seen it take quicker than 2 years in California.
Oh my. Okay. So 2 years with probate, and with a trust, it's a matter of months or?
Yeah, probably 8 to 9 months.
Oh, okay. So it's maybe half the time. Okay. So the next thing in your estate plan, healthcare directives?
Sure. Then we're getting into the checklist of what happens if you're sick. And that suite of documents involves a healthcare power of attorney, a power of attorney for assets, and a determination of whether you want your life support taken away if you're in a vegetative state. The first one's called the healthcare power of attorney, as you mentioned, Martin, and that is who makes healthcare decisions for you if you cannot make them yourself. And that's usually your spouse, and then it'll be something like a brother, sister, mother combination.
Now, some people talk about something called an advanced healthcare directive. Is there a difference or?
Not necessarily. It's just every state has it from state to state. In California, they call it an advanced healthcare directive because you are making this in advance of you becoming sick.
Gotcha. Okay. So then there'd be the financial power of attorney. Do you need a financial power of attorney too?
Yes, you do. Because in case you're sick, no one can go to the bank and access your bank accounts. No one can file your tax returns. You're really stymied unless you have this. If you don't have it, oftentimes I have to go into court, get someone appointed. It can be very expensive.
All right. So the next question is, what if you're doing this while you still have kids at home or doing this with adult children? Is there anything different you have to consider there?
With younger children, it is you have to name a guardian of the person. If they're under 18, you've got to make sure that they have someone who can take care of the kids until they are 18. With older children, you want to say, well, at what point should they get the money? If older children are not able to handle money, then they should only get the money at ages 25, 30, or 35, or after a period of time when they've probably gotten through their education. A lot of people, without, you know, making this determination and trust, the children get the money right at 18.
So you have younger kids, you have to appoint somebody to oversee these assets and how they're distributed and protected for them. So the next one is, somebody told me about beneficiary forms, that there was a way to file forms with your bank or brokerage so that money could transfer. Like, we have a daughter. If my wife and I were both, if we both died, we would want her to be able to get access to money right away. Are these beneficiary forms something you can do to make sure your kids get money before 8 months?
Sure. Also, a lot of people who do have wills and trusts, we recommend having what's called a joint account. That's what you're referring to. Sometimes you don't want things locked up in trust if you want somebody to have immediate access to money. So if you name a joint account or a beneficiary of the joint account, if one of them passes away or is no longer there, the other person can get it right away. In California, joint accounts don't go through probate, so you can get access to the money right away through that method.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing, right?
Yep.
I wouldn't want my daughter waiting 8 months to get access to money if we weren't here. I'd want her to be able to get it right away.
Yep. And that's a very common method in many estates of California, to just name beneficiary designations over joint accounts.
Okay. Now, Mike, the next one is about life insurance, the role of life insurance in an estate plan. There's a type of insurance they should consider here as part of estate planning. And there's also the funeral insurance. In the worst case scenario here, I don't want my daughter to be burdened by my passing. I financially, certainly not. What are the types of insurance I need to think about as part of my estate plan?
Well, with respect to life insurance, there are multiple reasons why you might want to consider using life insurance. For example, kind of the basics are a death benefit, either for your kids or for your spouse. And there are different ways to get life insurance depending on the circumstances. For example, I'm talking to somebody right now. He has some real estate, and there is some debt associated with several of his properties. And if he dies, he wants those properties to be debt-free for his spouse. This is well before she might pass away. So he can get some life insurance on himself for a circumstance like that to pay off the debt so she can realize the cash flows without any debt service on those properties and maintain her style of living. It depends on everyone's situation, but the basics, which I think is what we're talking about here, is some death benefit, depending on the circumstances, for either your spouse or to pay the estate taxes, depending on how large your estate might be. So it really depends. Everybody should should look at their own individual situation. Talk to a planner, whether it be a financial planner or estate planning attorney, and talk to them about your situation, what your desires are, and how life insurance might be applicable to your situation, because everyone's is different. And life insurance ends up being just a byproduct of what your situation is and how you want to treat your family and or any charitable inclination that you might have. So life insurance almost always plays a role, but it can play multiple roles depending on your situation.
You just brought up something I just hadn't thought about before. The estate tax issue, 99% of people won't be impacted by it because you're not going to pay the estate tax unless your estate's worth more than $5 million or so, $5.25 million. But you could have an insurance policy just to pay off a vacation home or a primary residence or something like that, a rental property. I mean, right?
That's exactly right. And you might also consider life insurance certainly as one of your retirement vehicles, because you can design a life insurance policy for tax-free retirement income, tax-free distributions out of the life insurance policy. And a lot of people don't even realize that life insurance can be used in this way, in addition to having the death benefit there. But it can be a very, very effective tool for retirement income planning. That's something that we've talked about a little bit on previous podcasts, but certainly something that people should be aware of.
And we are going to talk about that, I think, the next podcast, really drill into some specific examples, because you could put away $10,000 over a 15-year period of time and really end up with a significant supplement to your income in retirement.
Yeah, and you can do it in a safe way, too. We talked a little bit about that as well. But I really would encourage people to learn more about that. We're going to talk a lot more about that on the podcast, but it's certainly a very effective way to plan for some of your basic expenses in retirement.
Because the income could be tax-free.
Correct.
Which is really, to me, the biggest issue there is. I don't think enough people think about that, but if taxes go up in the future, and I would tell you they will, you know, no one knows, but I would tell you it's very likely, that's really going to take the biggest bite out of everybody's check, isn't it? Above anything else is going to be taxes.
Well, we think that one of the most effective ways to accumulate any wealth is to minimize your taxes. And Renee does a great job working with folks to minimize taxes, both on a current basis and for their estate planning purposes.
What about funeral expenses? Is that, you see all these things, you know, buy a separate policy for. Is that something people should do, is buy that extra side policy to cover funeral expenses?
It depends on everyone's situation, but funeral expenses are getting more and more costly. They are $5,000 to $8,000 minimum for most mortuaries.
Oh, yeah.
If you want a cremation or a burial plot. And that's something that young people don't really think about, but as you get older, it's definitely something you don't want to try and have to burden your family with, especially because it's unexpected. We all do get older, and that shock to the system, whether it's a heart attack or a stroke, does happen.
Yeah, if you haven't been through this before, the guys that sell the caskets are like car salesmen. They're really very good.
Well,
I was shocked. I was like, they upsell you know?
Well, to that point, Martin, I have a very recent experience because my mom just passed away. And between the funeral arrangements, the reception, fortunately, we had a burial plot that was purchased a long time ago, but the casket, I mean, you know, to Renee's point, it, 8,000 is probably a light number, and it would have been really nice to have had some insurance policy to cover that expense.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. It does. It adds, it can very quickly get into the $10,000 or $15,000 range and above. And if, should it be a separate policy, I would imagine the earlier you buy such a policy, the less it is, right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So that's something I'm going to take a look at myself. I haven't bought that kind of insurance either. In terms of final arrangements, Renee, things like organ and body, you know, organ donation, things like that. How do you go about that?
Sure. Most states have that covered in the Advanced Healthcare Directive that we talked about earlier. The Advanced Healthcare Directive in California has four basic parts. The first one is basically to say who's going to make medical decisions for you. Second part is, do you want your life terminated if you're in a vegetative state, which is a very important decision. Third part is organ donation. Do you want organ donation just for transplant only? Or are you willing to be a cadaver and have it do for education and therapy? And the last part is, should an attending physician that you've been working with for a long period of time, particularly if you have a chronic disease like cancer, should that person be consulted if you're in a critical state also?
Right. So, okay, usually that's in the healthcare directive. What about the issue of cremation or burial? Where does that go?
That can also go in the Advanced Healthcare Directive under a section called Other Wishes. It is actually very hard to cremate a body in certain states unless you say, I would like cremation.
Okay. Now, what about the issue of what if you have a business? What if you're a business owner? Your special concerns, a succession plan, do estate planning attorneys handle that, or is it somebody else? I mean, how do you go, what's involved there?
That is a group effort, Martin. That's our heavy lifting. That's a specialty I have, specialty Mike has, but you have to assemble a team. The business owner has to assemble a team of an insurance person, a financial person, a CPA, and an attorney. They have to work well together. Sometimes you have a check and balance person there. And everyone has to agree that this is best for the family. This is what the team approach is. This is the final recommendation or recommendations, and let the business owner decide. But it is heavy, heavy lifting.
Yeah, I mean, this is where things can really end up going badly if you don't have one, right?
Yep, this is where the wars happen. This is where taxes can destroy businesses. This is where, you know, key employees leave. This is a very, very technical area.
Yeah, now, and insurance also has a role here. The agreement's called a buy-sell, right? It's a buy-sell agreement?
Yeah, usually it depends, though, Martin, because a lot of business owners just own it themselves. A lot of business owners today don't have partners. But if a business owner has a partner, usually they enter into a buy-sell that says, if I die, you buy me out, or if you die, I buy you out. But a lot of people don't want to buy each other out. They want to say, hey, if I die, you keep working full-time and pay the income to my spouse. Well, sometimes that works for people and sometimes it doesn't. But what the problem with that approach is, where are we going to pay taxes from? We can't sell the business. So in that case, if you don't want to buy each other out, you have to have a significant insurance policy structured in a special way to say that insurance will be available to the estate to pay estate taxes. Very complex.
So that's where, I guess, the company buys insurance.
Either the company or the other individual. It's called cross insurance. I buy on you, you buy on me.
I see. So if you have a partner or a corporation or some type of business structure, those are different issues, I'd imagine, than if it's just a sole proprietorship.
Right. And many businesses today are still run by one person or one family.
Yeah. So that's really a whole other issue, but it's a whole separate area that you have to focus on if you have a business, even a small business.
Correct. Even a small business means everything to your family, your employees, to tax situations, to your final, you know, final income tax return. There's just a lot that goes into running a business.
What about all these? Now we have a will, we have a trust, we have insurance policies, there's real estate documents, there's, you know, certain certificates, maybe a stock or bonds or annuities or whatever, bank account statements, you know, documents for retirement plans, your debts like credit cards and mortgages and things, or funeral prepayment plans. Where do all those go?
Okay, Martin, that is such a good question. There are online services where you can buy basically an estate folder or an estate organizer. They're anywhere from $200 to $300. I would get it all day long. I have to say from, you know, medium to large to extremely large wealth, nobody's got it done. The attorney has a piece, the CPA has a piece, documents are missing, so-and-so remembered some insurance policy from way back when. No one does it, Martin. The bottom line is no one does it. The only people I've seen really do it well are women who bought the organizer, believe it or not.
Well, you know, I'm so glad I asked that question. As I was thinking about it, I recently testified in a court case where I was asked by one of the lawyers how long it would take for somebody to get their mortgage documents together. And I responded, I don't know, somewhere between 2 hours, or if my wife's not home, maybe never. I don't know where they are. I mean,
and that's so true.
I couldn't put my hands on my to save my life. I couldn't even guess where it is. I haven't looked at it in 20 years. I don't know where it is. I wouldn't know where to find it. I can barely remember the name of the lawyer who did our trust. In fact, sitting here trying to right now, I'm not sure I can. Wow, I really can't. So, yeah, I mean, how would my daughter find that guy, right? I know where his office is. If I think about it for a while, maybe I'll think of it. But this really is a big issue, isn't it? I mean, bringing all those things together, I mean, what good is it have doing them if no one can put their hands on them?
Yeah, and, you know, the main thing that the people on the line need to know about is you're not alone. You know, like I said, almost everyone is in the same shape. But if you can make the step to at least purchase the organizer, you know, that's 99% of the battle is trying to get it going.
So I guess it's the sort of thing you scan these things in and store it in a one place online, and then you just go there to get them all.
You can go there to get them all, or people still do it the old-fashioned way, which is it's an organizer that comes out and it says, this is my will, this is my trust, this is my mortgage document. You know, it's basically an old accordion file that'll work fine too.
Yeah, except that as you add to it, you got to make sure you put it in there. If you don't, it's not in there, someone's not going to know about it.
Right, but if you start young and get used to it, you know, it becomes easier.
Yeah, I suppose, except the older I get, I seem to forget more. I don't No, I think the online thing, I'll try to find some of those and list them on the blog. I think the online thing is a brilliant, I never thought about it before. I think it's a brilliant business model. I think that's great. Put them all there. Terrific. Otherwise, I mean, what good is doing all of this if it's lost? I bet a lot of people have things that get lost, don't they?
Not necessarily. You'd be surprised by the time you go to the attorney, the CPA, the financial person, the insurance person, how the pieces come together. It's just time consuming and it causes repetitive work and additional cost.
Yeah, and what if you don't know the name of the CPA or the lawyer? I mean, it might be 2 years before you found something, you know, in a file or whatever. Yeah, that's important to think about where you're putting all this stuff, because it's a big list, right? It's a lot of things. Your will, your trust, your healthcare directives, your power of attorneys, your financial benefit forms or life insurance policies, funeral policies or whatever. I mean, that's a hefty file.
So, agreed.
So how long should this take? I realize that this is a very difficult question. There's going to be all kinds of variances here depending on your particular situation. But if somebody started today and said, okay, I'm going to get my act together on this stuff, how long should it take to put this estate plan together, start to finish?
My recommendation is usually we have a first meeting. We have a second meeting to actually review the documents in person. Sometimes we have a third meeting to go back and forth on the documents and a fourth meeting. It takes about 3 months, so 90 days from start to finish for my piece. And in terms of really, you know, working with an insurance agent and a financial planner, I would give yourself 6 months to 9 months, but I would start on the process.
Right. So start now and, you know, within maybe 6 or 9 months, you could have it all tightened down. All the decisions have been made. I mean, obviously, if you have a business, it might be complex, but, you know, for the average kind of thing, it's something you can get done maybe in 6 months.
Yeah. And, you know, another piece to the insurance, which Mike can speak to, is the fact that a lot of insurance policies you do have to qualify for. You have to go through what's called underwriting. You want to speak to that a little bit? And that can take some time.
Well, and I knew that's where you were going in terms of the 6 to 9 months. The underwriting is a process that everyone needs to go through who's getting an insurance policy. It basically involves getting copies of your medical records from your doctors. They're all used to providing those things. So, you know, all you have to do is fill out a form with your doctor's names on it and sign it. And then we reach out to the medical community to get those records. And then you need a short exam by a paramedic. It only takes 20 or maybe 15 to 30 minutes. And then that gets submitted to various insurance companies and you get rated based on the quality of your health. And based on your rating will determine to a certain extent the cost of the insurance policy that you get. But that's just an overview of the underwriting process, how that works. But depending on how quickly your doctors get back to you with information and how quickly you can schedule your exam, the process generally will take anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks to several months, just depending on how quickly you can respond.
Now, a lot of people lately I've talked to have said that they think they won't be able to get coverage because of a past illness, but that's not necessarily true, is it?
That typically is not the case, depending on how recent and how severe that illness has been. But, you know, for most illnesses that, you know, that have been treated, and particularly if you're on the mend, people can get insured.
Yeah, I recently had somebody tell me, even after going through a bout of cancer, something 5 or 6 years later, they were able to get some reasonable coverage.
Oh, so, you bet.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't know that. You can still get life insurance coverage after that. If you're 5 or 6 years cancer-free, you can actually get life insurance.
Right.
And talking about women specifically, and we're going to go over this, I think, in the next podcast with some specific examples, but it's less expensive for women to buy insurance, right? It just is. They get better rates.
Yeah, it really depends on the carrier, but typically the premiums for women will generally be a little bit lower than for the male counterpart.
And when we talk life insurance, there's whole life, there's term life, and then there's universal life, and then variable life. There's four kinds.
Well, some are versions of the others, but the two basic types of policies are term and permanent insurance. Term is just quickly for a specified period of time, and then you have no more coverage after that time period, whether it be 5 years, 10 years. Some term policies now go out to 20 and even 30 years. But you build up no cash value in those policies. So they're not worth anything except the death benefit, as opposed to a permanent policy, whether it be whole life, universal life. This is a topic for another separate podcast because it gets very detailed.
Sure.
But they're different types. There's permanent and there's term, and permanent builds up cash value, so it can become part of your estate plan. It's worth something. Cash value builds up, and you also have a death benefit. There are applications for both. We should talk more about that at a later date.
For today, we're talking about estate planning, making a will, considering a trust, your health care directives, your financial powers of attorney, protecting the children, beneficiary forms, life insurance, estate taxes, funeral expenses, final arrangements like organ donations, protecting businesses, and then where to keep all those documents. That's really the sort of soup to nuts example of what's involved in estate planning. Would that cover it?
Yep, I think that's a great place to start, Martin.
The one thing about this story we call life is it ends badly for all of us, and we have to face that reality and be prepared for it. It's an unpleasant subject, but it's not like it's going away.
Nope, it's part of life.
Yeah, that's right. Well, look, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. And we will be on the next one talking more detail about investing and saving for retirement. I just did a piece on savings and kind of fascinated with the whole subject of how to save more. I think there's no question that in this country, we need to do that. If the picture is not looking good out there for as far as being prepared. So I really appreciate you coming on, and we'll talk again.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Well, there you have it. That was Renee Gabbard, a partner in the Private Client Service Group at Bryan Cave, and Mike Moorhead, partner in Tippett Moorhead. These are two nationally recognized experts in retirement and estate planning. So I hope you found that interesting, and I hope you found it valuable. And I hope you took a couple of notes, because if you just follow that list, you can get your estate plan done and have all those issues that have been nagging at you kind of put to bed, and you'll sleep better because of it. I know I do. And there's a few things in there I learned that I got to put together myself. Well, listen, estate planning is not something that I think is upbeat or anything like that. But the thing is, it's important, and it's something that everybody puts off. So I wanted to have them on so that everyone could just see what's involved and, make their own list. Because once you have a list, it's easy to get things done. The next podcast will have Mike Moorhead back, and we'll talk about retirement investing, how to save money in a safe way. No matter how late it is, you can still change the future by saving in a safe way. And Mike Moorhead is an expert at that. That is his specialty, controlling risk while saving for the future. You'll be fascinated by some of the things he has to say, because he'll show you how to enjoy the market upsides without having any of the downsides. And that's what we all need. So until then, this is Martin Mandelman from Mandelman Matters, and this has been a Mandelman Matters podcast. Thanks for listening.